Our challenge as operators is to really become efficient operators and make sure we're honing in as expense reduction or challenging every item on the expense account and just making sure that our revenue grows faster than our expenses.
Welcome to the Passive Income Brothers podcast.
Here, we take the fear out of real estate investing using real-life stories of everyday successful investors.
Let's go.
Welcome to another episode of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. My name is Tim Lyons, and today I am joined by my brother and co-host, Greg Lyons. How are you doing today, buddy?
Tim, I am doing wonderful. And more than anything, I've enjoyed the last 5 minutes of you trying to pronounce our guest's last name. And I won't even go down the road of trying, but it's been a real amusing time for me. So other than that, I am super happy to be here, Tim.
Greg, I'm always happy to support you, buddy. No matter what, I'm always there for you and I got you.
Thank you, pal. Thank you.
So today we have a great guest and somebody who has a history of the W-2 work life, being a family man, also being a limited partner in other people's deals and then transitioning into general partnership. And I really want to dive into all that because here at the Passive Income Brothers, we love to talk to people who have kind of walked the walk and have gone through the transformation that's kind of needed to be into real estate. So
yeah, Tim, there's no doubt about that. And a lot of the people listening here are limited partners in our deals or in other deals. But Randy took the next step and said, how do I get involved and how do I take this to the next level? And that's why I think this podcast is pretty cool. You see the evolution of the limited partner.
Love that. So without further ado, I want to welcome to the show Randy Langendurfer. How are you doing today, Randy?
Woo! I'm doing great, Tim, and that was great pronunciation. It is intimidating in length, but I really appreciate the opportunity to be in you guys' show here. I've been a follower from a distance for a while and watching you guys' exponential growth and just happy to come alongside.
Awesome. So, you know, what I found here, Randy, is that the commercial real estate space, the multifamily space, it's a very large swath of people that are involved. But it can also be a super, super small group, a small little community. Everybody kind of knows everybody. And that's how kind of we got connected with a mutual friend. So I'm happy that we actually had that introduction finally made, right? And here we are today. So Randy, can you tell people a little bit about your background, kind of where you've been, what you're doing, and where you're going to be going next?
Well, thanks. Happy to do so. And thanks again for letting me be on your show. So real quick, Randy Langendurfer, I currently reside in the Houston, Texas market. I think you mentioned I'm gainfully employed at a large academic medical center here in the Houston, Texas area in an administrative role. I've been in the real estate world for about 8 years. But before I do that, my wife always criticizes me that I don't talk about my family. So I need to tell you that I'm a father of four. I have 3 adult children. I have 5 grandchildren. And at the end of the day, that is more important to me to anything than real estate, as I'm sure you guys can agree. But on the real estate side, I have started out being a hard money lender, actually, in the single family space, flipping houses. And about 2010, 11, when I was then living in the Cleveland, Ohio market with a brother-in-law, and I came to Houston for a job opportunity and got involved. I heard about multifamily at a lifestyles conference here in Houston. I got involved with that and just never really looked back. Today, I'm a general partner in about 700 doors, and I'm a passive investor in several thousand doors and trying to ramp up my game like everybody. While still employed, I get 2 deals I'm doing right now, and I'm just having a lot of fun. You know, people say, how do you do it? It's not work for me. And if you enjoy it, you know, it's just not work. So yeah, I may be up late or early, up early, but guys, I think you've got the fever too, I know. So it's not work. So I can say,
Randy, you're absolutely right. And you know, it's not work when you enjoy what you're doing. I know Tim probably wakes up sometimes and says, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to talk to my brother yet again today. But other than that, the real estate world has been fantastic to us. And Randy, if you can, it is hard having a W-2 job and getting into real estate because there are early mornings and late nights. Yeah. But a lot of people, successful, busy professionals, go the limited partner route. Can you just explain to our audience a little bit what it means to be a GP or a general partner in the deal and kind of how you took that evolution from limited partner to general partner?
Sure. Happy to do so. Well, the general partner role is just very simply stands for general partner, also referred to as the syndicator or the sponsor. You know, their role is simply to identify, find assets and find investors to acquire, operate, and own multifamily units. I mean, at the simplest form, the general partner is the one taking the risk. They're the ones that find a deal. They put up front money at risk with the lenders and attorneys and other fees. They do the due diligence on the property. And they put together a package. And I'm having a call last night with an investor, you know, and he said, man, this really looks easy. You know, you're just asking me for money and go about and make money. I go, well, you really don't see the tens and the hundreds of hours behind the scenes where the general partner is doing it on a flight next Thursday morning at literally 7 a.m. to Tucson, Arizona to look at a deal. Because that's what we do. We find deals and we find investors. So I made the transition. I got started like many people when I first came to Houston as a limited partner because I didn't have the confidence and I didn't have the time to allocate to it. Then I didn't want to make the time. Let me say that. I didn't want to make the time. So I joined one of the large mentoring groups. I mentioned Lifestyles. I'm currently in Rod Khalif's organization as a coach. I think you guys are in Jake and Gino. So there are many different venues for passive investors to get involved with. I was at a meetup last night, meeting people on podcasts, many of them to listen to, which you guys have got a great show here. But so for the LP investor to get comfortable, it's really spending the time to network, going to one of the associations, listening to podcasts, reading, and when it comes time to write that first $50,000 check, I'm a finance guy at heart. And so, yeah, my hand was kind of trembling at the time, my first investment. And like, do I really know this guy? Do I really trust him? But for the passive investor, once you do that, your role is pretty much done. You're sitting, you know, as I've heard it explained before, you're on the airplane and in the passenger seat and the general partner is the pilot in front of the plane flying the ship. And so, it's been very good to me as a passive investor. I've had one big problem out of probably 15 or 20 different assets I've passively invested in. But overall, since 2014, I've tracked my return and totalized 120% as a passive investor. And so I'm real pleased with that.
Wow, that is fantastic. And let me just make one comment. You said you joined Rod Khalif's Warrior Group. We had Rod on a couple of episodes ago, and my hair, it's very little if you're watching on YouTube or know me, but it's still blown back because he brought all the energy. I mean, Rod Khalif was amazing on when he was on the podcast.
I told him, I said, Rod, I wish you would bring some emotion to the show, you know, because he was like almost in my screen, you know, like the whole time. It was amazing.
He definitely got 8 hours of sleep that night.
And in person, he's even better. I mean, he's just on from, I don't know, I've never seen him off, put it that way, or slowed down. He's just on, is all I can say. You're right.
So, Randy, I want to unpack some of this, dude. This is like my favorite topic in the whole world. There was a lot of gold in what you've said so far. We've only been chatting for a few minutes, right? So, you know, from all the education, the content that I've consumed, whether it's audiobooks, reading books, podcasts, meetups, networking, mentorship, coaching, right? There's a certain couple of steps that are woven throughout all of them when it comes to real estate investing. And I'd say the first one is knowing why you're doing it, right? What is your why? Why do you want to be involved in real estate? Whether it's limited partner, general partner, sole owner, you know, group owner, whatever you do, note investing, hard money lending, there's a reason why we're doing this, right? And generally speaking, it's because we know the power of passive income, yet we just don't know how to get there yet, right? So then the next step is education, right? Whether it's you're reading books, taking in content, or Audible, podcasts. So then you're getting the education, right? So now you have your why, you know why you're doing this. You're spending late nights, early mornings, commute time in the car, taking in content when you could be doing other stuff. And then you get educated. And then people run into a brick wall, right? It's like, I know why I should be doing this. And now I know around, you know, what I want to do, single family, duplexes, multifamily, self-storage, industrial, whatever you want to do, right? And the next step is action, right? And it's people getting over that hurdle and getting towards that action that makes all the difference. Yet so many people get up to that wall and then they back away. So Randy, I really want to hear, like, what was that point for you when you realized why you did it? I'm assuming it's probably because you had a W-2 job, you're working a ton of hours, you got four kids, you want to be a good dad, you want to be a good husband, you know, but you know, you're making good money and you want to put that money to use, right? And I think everybody has that. And then people back away from the wall. And then, you know, for Greg and I, it was taking that extra step of getting mentored and coached. And we had to pay for that, right? And that was a hard pill to swallow. If you know us, Randy, we are probably two of the cheapest guys you will ever meet, right? Like, and, you know, so we had to come out of pocket for that. And that was incredibly hard for us to do. But then it brought us closer to taking that action. So can you kind of comment on the psychology of being an investor in general, whether you're GP, LP or whatever?
Yeah.
And then kind of tell us, like, how did you get over that to take that action?
Well, you just that's a whole podcast there in itself. But that's a statement. So sure, let me try to echo and assist what you just said. But I can only speak to my journey. And so my journey starts with, I think you have to understand everybody's personality is different, right? I'm a finance guy at heart, and finance people, at least the ones I know, are pretty risk averse and say no 4 out of 5 times. That's the mindset of which I'm an MBA, CPA, and so, you know, I don't like risk, but you know that risks have to be taken. But we all take risk, right? We get married, we have kids, we buy houses, we buy cars. Those are just risks that people accept as normal. And for me personally, it was that season of life about 8 years ago when I came to Houston that I was working for a private equity job and I was making really good money. And I just realized that that was coming to an end. And I probably wouldn't be able to replace the income that I had had in the event I got laid off. Now, I was fortunate I found another opportunity here in Houston and never looked back. But it was that realization. Plus, I'm kind of a do-it-yourselfer. I like looking into this stuff. And I have a financial advisor, but he calls and gives me this, you know, this option or that option. And I'm like, I don't know anything about XYZ Corporation or anything. So I really... one, concerned about income from a job perspective, and two, realizing that I was going to have to find another income source. So whatever you're doing, whether you guys have day jobs, I have a day job, you need to find another income source, no matter where you are, whether you're filthy rich or you're not filthy rich, and anywhere in between. And that for me became real estate. And so you're absolutely right. You know, I heard it described first, Tim, as everybody's personality is different. You've heard of the illustration of ready, aim, fire. You know, so I say as a finance guy, I know my weaknesses today. And my weaknesses are I'm ready, I aim. And to your point, that first fire was difficult, but you got to do it. If you really want the advantages of it. I mean, you can't talk about having a passive income stream or a second revenue source in your personal life. And as time goes on and as you educate yourself in the means that you just talked, all those different venues, you know, you're mitigating your risk by doing that. And I've always been amazed too that I talk to people that don't want to spend the money for a mentor or one of the coaching organizations. And then I ask them, I said, well, you know, do you have a college degree or a trade school or something like that? Oh, yeah. You know, well, you spent tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars on those degrees today. And look at how much time you invested in yourself to get that job you were looking for. Don't you want to invest something in your real estate education as well? And yeah, it may cost you whatever you want to do. You can go at it slowly or you can go at it real fast and join some really extensive programs that ramp up the learning curve. So ready, aim, fire, educate yourself to mitigate your risk, and you got to pull the trigger. And now I'm wondering if I just pull the trigger too fast sometimes.
You got used to it, right? You got used to it.
You do. I mean, it's like, I don't know, for everybody, wherever you're at, it's like owning a car. Once you own a car, you don't think about going out and buying another one.
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt.
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, there's so many people that, you know, who are in real estate that say, listen, anybody can do real estate. It's not like you don't need a PhD. You know, you don't need some really highly specialized skill. It'd be nice if you had that, right? But I mean, you don't need it. Anybody can do it. And literally, like, the antidote to fear is education with anything in life, right? The antidote to fear is education, right? So if you're educated and you're around people that are doing like-minded things and you're in a group, whether it's a meetup that's free or you pay for coaching or you get a mentor or you work for free or you do an internship, there's so many different ways to get involved. But, you know, I'm assuming with you, you know, you were a limited partner, meaning you were a passive investor, just building out some income streams in commercial real estate. You got comfortable doing that. You understood the process. And then you jumped onto the general partner side and said, listen, I can do this too, right? And being in commercial real estate and real estate in general is a team sport, right? So you bring your finance background, Greg and I can raise capital. And then all of a sudden we have, you know, we start building out a team, and that's how this works. I think, you know, for just in my little short journey, is people have a hard time talking to other people about money, about finances. There's a keeping up with the Joneses type of culture that we've kind of grew up in, right? So like, you know, nobody wants to give away their trade secrets. So if you have the nice car or the nice house, like, you don't want to tell people maybe how you did it or, you know, something like that. But, you know, that's what we call the scarcity mentality. And that's how Greg and I grew up. We grew up in the scarcity mentality until about 2 years ago. You know, and then once you make that switch, right, you make that switch into that abundance mentality. That there's enough pie for everybody to eat. You know, and then you start talking about money, you start talking about investments, you get around people that are doing the thing that you want to do, you start, you know, bouncing best practices off people. And this is not rocket science. But Randy, what I want to ask you is, you know, it's funny, you said something about your financial advisor called you with a couple of different options. And I think one of them, Greg and I are registered representatives of a broker dealer. So we have our Series 82 and our Series 63 licenses. And we work with a, you know, a broker dealer that focuses solely on private placements in commercial real estate. But broker dealers are also, well, registered investment advisors are also, like, you know, quote unquote financial advisors. And they get paid basically when, you know, they sell a product to you. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Transactions. Right. Hey, Randy, I got a good stock, or I got a good fund, or check out this, or whatever. So where's the paradigm shift? You know, because Greg and I are like, you know, I still have a 457 with my fire department job, you know, and I'll have that until the day I retire. And then I'm going to convert it into a self-directed checkbook controlled account and get into real estate. But right now I'm in equities. You know, stuff like that. But like, where's that paradigm shift between how we grew up about, you know, you got to put your money into the stock market, you know, week after week, check after check, biweekly check, monthly check, whatever. And what drives me crazy is people say, Tim, real estate's risky, man. Like, I don't know, man, 50,000 at a time. Ooh, that sounds too risky. Yet they'll put, you know, every 2 weeks blindly into their 457, 401k, 403b. Yeah. And right now you look at your account, you're down 20, 30, 40, 50%. Well, that's risky, dude. Like, that is crazy risk. I mean, what do you think about that?
You bring up a great point. I've made the shift, paradigm shift. So I would, if you're employed, I always encourage the students I talk to continue to contribute those, because you get the free money that somebody is, you know, matching. But I don't put in anything more than that these days, only because that's just the concept. And you're right. You can roll it over into different vehicles that are totally legal. I'm coaching a couple people right now on how to do that. And it's just the power of unleashing it. But it goes back to, in my mind, you're right. We were all grew up that way. The stock market, my dad worked for 35 years and invested and then retired. And I have another very high net worth individual. I mean, a lot of money. And he talks about real estate being, as you said, a little risky. And I'm thinking, like, your season of life, not investing to me is more riskier as a finance mindset in having a portfolio. So I fast forward to my current job, large academic medical center. We have a $2 billion endowment. And real estate has finally come off the charts as an alternative investment and is now labeled singly as a class of itself called real estate. So you have traditional bonds, equities, real estate. And so I tell my high net worth friend, I says, you know, in that portfolio, $2 billion, there's an allocation to real estate specifically because of what we've all talked about. So if it's kind of good for them, it's kind of good for, and I said, in my organization, we have up to 15% of the net worth, I mean, of the endowment based in various real estate, commercial real estate projects. I don't know how, I haven't looked into if they're multifamily or what they are, but just that alone, 15% of a $2 billion allocation. Now, I'm much more heavily weighted than that today. I'm probably about 40% of my net worth is in commercial real estate projects, just because that's my comfort level. And I would subscribe to the Warren Buffett, you know, the diversification is for losers, kind of. He says that, you know, if you know something, he doubled downs on stuff. So I've studied it. I've educated myself. I've become a what I call an investor versus a speculator. And once you understand the risk and you're comfortable with them, as Warren would say, it's less risk because you know it. That's why he invests in a lot in single companies, because he digs in deep and becomes very comfortable with what that product line is and what they're selling and how they're making money. So I don't know, did that answer a little bit of it, Tim?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was good. You know, you talk about risk and the ready, aim, then fire investor. Tim and I really enjoy the investor that gets educated and then they become the ready, fire, aim investor. That's always fun.
Because then you kind of have to pull them back a little bit. I've got this investor today who's actually been a missionary overseas for many years, and she's wanting to dump a lot of her net worth into a couple projects I'm working on. And I'm kind of going, she's like, fire, aim, ready.
Yeah. No, that's
that. And I'm trying to call her back a little bit, say, do you really want to do this?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, but you know, you talk about risk about with anything you do, stock market, real estate, you know, Bitcoin, whatever it is, right. there's risk in everything. And, you know, we are in the multifamily space and there's a little bit of carnage going on in the stock market right now. So I just wanted to get your take on kind of the state of the multifamily market. Yeah. Where do you see things right now? And where do you see things for the rest of 2022?
Yeah, I could be making a whole lot more money if I had the answer to all those questions today. but I've got opinions, I think, as we all do. And you know, I'm in the space too, so you may say that I'm biased, but I honestly believe, at least from everything I read, and I, you know, whenever I get in the car these days, I'm listening to a podcast, and my wife says, can we not listen to a real estate podcast anymore?
That sounds familiar.
Can we listen to some music or something?
I may or may not have had the same conversation myself.
You know, won't say anything to protect your wife. But to the point of it is so trying to educate yourself. And so my point of it is my opinion is an opinion. And I think, you know, from everything I hear, it obviously is unsettling. It sounds like the Fed's going to bump, you know, anywhere from 50 to 75 basis points today. And it'll probably happen. And I think inflation is evident and going to happen. No, it's just a matter of how fast we can get it under control. But I think you subscribe to the fact that inflation from the mindset of the investor says that means inflation also means rising asset prices, regardless of whether I do anything to the property. I mean, regardless if I do, it's my home is appreciating today and I'm not doing anything to it. And I think commercial real estate is the same way. It's going to continue to be that way. And for the foreseeable future. So inflation will have asset prices. I think it also rises to the fact of rent growth. So rents are going to continue to grow up for the foreseeable future, the next 12, 24 months. I actually kind of feel sorry for some renters because the prices are going up. I'm looking at Tucson right now. Tucson is notably the highest rent growth in the nation, projected to be 35% over the next 5 years. And as an investor, that's attractive. As a tenant, that's bad, I guess. But so inflation leads to asset prices. It leads to rent growth. I think the challenge for us as operators is really to make sure that our revenue grows faster than our expenses, because our expenses are also going to be growing. And so our challenge as operators is to really become efficient operators and make sure we're honing in as expense reduction or challenging every item on the expense account and just making sure that our revenue grows faster than our expenses. And then there's the the adage that when's the best time to buy real estate? A mentor of mine many years ago told me, you know, the best time is 20 years ago or today. So, you know, you have to take action and you have to get in the game. You're never going to be successful by being on the sidelines. But 22, I think, is going to continue to be a volatile environment. I don't think it's going to reverse its course real fast. Aware of inflation, but it's just another headwind we're facing, and we have to face it head on.
I love that, Randy. And you know, just to stack on top of that, you know, especially in the commercial real estate space, specifically multifamily, you know, we're becoming a renter's nation, right? I mean, we've been hearing that for years, but specifically right now, I mean, with the 30-year mortgage interest rates have shot up the fastest it's ever shot up in history. And let that sink in, right? I mean, historically, they're still low, right? 5% and 6%, but they've shot up from, you know, 2.75%, you know, just like a year ago, you know? So that prices a lot of first-time folks and other people out of the market, because if you're thinking about moving, but you have a 2.5%, 2.75%, 3% interest rate, that's really an asset. You know, when you talk about assets and liabilities, the debt that you have with real estate can be a really, it's a huge asset. So people aren't willing to trade their 3% interest rate for a 6% right now. It just doesn't make any sense, right? And there's been a run-up in prices. So I think there's going to be some price discovery in the single-family market, no doubt about it, as well as the multifamily market. But that's where the challenge lies, right? Because there's going to be renters. People cannot afford the down payment on the run-up in prices. And now people buy on monthly payments. They don't necessarily buy on the nominal, you know, price of the home, right? So if their interest rates has skyrocketed, you know, they simply can't afford to make that monthly payment anymore. Right. And that just leads to good people with good jobs having to be renters by necessity until this kind of shakes out. So that's where the resiliency in multifamily lies. I think there is going to be price discovery in multifamily as well, but that's where the opportunity lies for good, solid operators that buy on the three immutable laws of real estate, which are you buy for cash flow day one, right? If it doesn't cash flow, we say let the grass grow, right? Because you have to move on to the next deal. The next one is using smart leverage, right? I think the days of using, you know, bridge debt can be, you know, debated right now. But if you have a good solid, you know, good solid terms on bridge debt to stabilize a property, it still makes sense. And then market fundamentals, right? I mean, you have to go where the jobs are, the population growth, you know, where is the supply and demand issues? You know, depending on who you talk to, we're 2 to 4 million housing units, you know, from where we need to be. That's going to be a decade or more until those housing units come online. So when you take all this into consideration, people, like when we're doing capital raises right now, in fact, people have a lot of questions about interest rates and, you know, rent growth can't continue. You know, like you just said, Tucson, 35% over the next 5 years. But what people fail to realize is, you know, say we're talking right now in June of 2022. If in the last 12 months, rent growth has been in some of these markets, Phoenix, Austin, San Antonio, Tucson, Tampa, Sarasota, if rent growth has been 15 to 25% in the last 12 months, well, guess what? Even if it's zero for the next 12 months, you still have that loss to lease, it's called, right? So when people renew their leases, if they were paying, you know, $1,000 for the last year, well, now you're going to bring them up to maybe $1,025 or $1,050 or $1,100 or something like that, because that's where the market is. So even if you don't have rent growth going forward, those rental increases are a lagging indicator. So I can go on and on about the merits and the benefits of multifamily and real estate, but those are some of the things that you need to talk about. You need to get educated about. You got to talk to your mentors about. You got to be coached. And if you're a high paid, you know, or decently well paid individual and you don't have time for this, you have to realize that there's passive opportunities out there. So anyway, Greg, I know I'm on my soapbox, man. I know you're dying to get me off of it. So, you know, Randy, you touched on a lot of things so far, GP, LP, but we glossed over the way you got started in real estate up in Ohio. And you said something about hard money lending. Can you explain to the listeners what hard money lending is? Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. Happy to do so. So very simply, I was, as I said, a finance risk adverse guy. And I had a brother-in-law of mine who I really respected, got laid off from an executive job at National City Bank in Cleveland at the time. And he had gone to Armando Montalegro's house flipping school, came back, spent a lot of money, went to California for 2 weeks, spent a lot of money, came back and said, you got to do this with me. And I said, you're crazy. On the ready, aim, fire scenario, you're crazy. And then over a period of time, he convinced me. And, you know, another thing he said, you got to use your IRA. I'm like, you're doubly crazy. Again, educate yourself, go through the process. But very simply, a hard money lender, we had partnered with a team. We were living in Cleveland, Ohio. We had partnered with a team out of South Florida, Dade County, specifically, who were boots on the ground, who would find the homes, put together a budget. And so as a hard money lender, we put up all the money to buy the asset and to rehab the asset and then flip it. And they would get, a portion of the growth. And we would get, for that, we would get at the time, this was in 2010, 11, we were getting like 12% return on our money, which was very good and very favorable. So a hard money lender is one who just puts up the capital to buy the asset and make the improvements. There are hard money lenders out in multifamily, but they're much fewer and generally for smaller projects than what we do today. But that was my first entrance into commercial real estate. And then I just realized, as I said, it is a lot of work. It's every property required due diligence on understanding not, you know, I understand the Houston market. It's finding that housing market within my specific mile radius of this location. And what are the comps, right? And so there's a big distinguishing factor. Single families value are all developed off of the comps. I can have the worst looking house in a nice neighborhood and be compensated. But commercial and specifically multifamily, as we know, is based off NOI, the net operating income. It's how much cash does the property generate? It doesn't matter where it sits. It might matter on how you get tenants, but from a financing perspective, and the other thing that's beautiful about multifamily, as you guys know, is there's non-recourse loans. So whenever I buy my primary residence or another house to flip, I'm on the hook if I borrow money with the bank. If I default, you know, they can come after me or my car, my other assets, et cetera. And the beautiful thing about multifamily is that they're non-recourse loans. So yes, if the very, very worst were to happen, and the bottom where black swan event were to happen and the property were to go negative, the bank could take back the property. Investors would lose as well as the GP. They'd lose their investment, but they can't come after anybody for their personal assets. I don't know about you guys, but that's huge for me. I don't want to lose. Worst case scenario, I may lose an investment I never have yet, but I don't want to lose everything I've accumulated for my entire life. So another
100%.
Another big advantage of commercial and specifically multifamily. Well, even in the other commercial points, I'm sorry, even the other commercials, good, you can't get a recourse loan. You have to take a recourse loan for retail or office or industrial. It's really only multifamily that you get non-recourse loans.
Yeah. And, you know, with commercial real estate, you're buying a flow of income, right? And then the bank realizes there's there's free cash flow, and that's what they're lending on, right? So that's why we're able to get those non-recourse loans. I just want to touch on one thing. I'm not a CPA. I'm not a financial advisor, but, you know, there are three buckets of income out there. There's active income bucket, which is taxed at the highest rates, right? Your normal income rates, right? Regular income rates. Right. Then the bucket number two is portfolio income, right? You got your stocks, bonds, ETFs, stuff like that. That's portfolio income. That's taxed at, long-term capital gains if you hold it for a year and a day. And then you have the most tax advantageous bucket, which is your passive income bucket, right? And into that flows all rental activities, right? So you have a single family home that goes in the passive income bucket. You have a LP position in a multifamily or a self-storage syndication that goes into the passive income bucket. And the beautiful thing about passive income is that it's offset by your passive losses or your paper losses, right? Which are phantom losses. They're not true losses. And we don't have time to dive into that, but that's what's so powerful about real estate. I just want to touch on hard money lending. Hard money lending goes into the active bucket, so it's going to be taxed at your regular income rates.
Ordinary
income rates, right? So it's a great way to generate, 9, 12, 15, 18 month returns of say 12 to 18%, something like that. But what's so powerful that you said, Randy, is that you use your IRA, right? So if you have a self-directed, IRA or a solo 401k or a checkbook controlled account, which is really something that's so powerful. We're going to have to do way more education to our listeners on that, Greg. But you can do that, get 10, 12, 18% in short-term hard money lending where you're secured in the first lien position, where you can be secured in first lien position on a fix and flip, on a land deal. I've done several of these, with my own money.
Yep.
And that can go, those gains go right back into your retirement account, tax deferred. Or if you have a Roth, it's tax free, right? So really, really powerful stuff. And I just wanted to kind of throw that out there to the listeners. So
yeah, that's another whole episode. I'd love to come back and chat with you about it. But I think you greatly underestimate your abilities there, Tim. You summed it up very well. Ordinary three buckets, ordinary income, capital gains, and passive. And yes, and the whole advantage of that. And you do those same buckets in your self-directed IRA or your solo 401k, except they accumulate too. So, even if I have a self-directed IRA, I'm in the process of flipping to a solo 401k or a checkbook IRA. But even in the IRA, even in the self-directed IRA, those passive losses are offset each other as well. So it is a very powerful tool. I remember selling my first general partnership, and I think I made a good six-figure number on it, and it was a beautiful thing. I didn't pay any taxes at all because you're offsetting it with the losses from your other investments in the passive category. And once you get your head around that, it is mind-blowing. And yeah, it's like, wow, what a country
we live in. Oh, it's definitely powerful. It's definitely powerful. This is we touched on a lot today, Randy, and we want to transition over to our last three questions that we ask every guest. And the first question is, and we touched on it a little bit earlier, what do you say to investors that say investing in real estate is too risky?
I think it's just that mindset that you spoke of. And so you just tactfully, as a syndicator or as a general partner, I try to give them little kernels and little nuggets. I don't expect to change their mind in one conversation, but I hope over a period of months or weeks that I can begin to change their mind with all the things you just talked about today, all the things we've talked about. It's viewed risky historically, but yet why does everybody own a personal home? If real estate is so risky, why does everybody have their own residence that they try to buy? It's a mindset that's acceptable, but investing in other multifamily assets is quote risky. And so it's just a limiting belief that we all need to continue to, I'll say, preach the message here about the virtues of passive investing and staying in the game for the long time. It's not it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. So stay in the game. And like you said, I'm not the brightest crayon in the box, but all you got to do is follow the game plan that's been laid out for us by others before us and has been successfully implemented by so many. Whether you're a firefighter or administrator or a doctor or a factory worker or a service worker, it works.
It simply works. I love that, Randy. Randy, the second question is something that is said by one of our favorite, de facto mentors, Robert Kiyosaki. And, if some people, when they first hear this, they can be like, dude, what are you talking about? Right? It doesn't make any sense. But what he says is savers are losers and debtors are winners. What does that mean to you, Randy?
Well, yes, I've heard that savers are losers and debtors are winners. And I think there's nothing wrong with saving. I think it's a portion on it. But I think Robert's mindset is we all grew up with that limiting belief again that save lots, get a job, climb the corporate ladder, save a lot of money, and hopefully in 40 years you'll retire and have enough money to live on. And saving is good. I think back to the IRA, I still say people should invest to the matching limit. But Robert's point is there's good debt and there's bad debt. So there's bad debt that is your credit card, or if you're living above your means and you've got all kinds of personal lines of credit out there and you're paying off it. The good debt is simply that's appreciating, and that creates cash flow for the investor. So the good debt is multifamily, is commercial real estate, where you're joining a team that, yes, 80% of the purchase price is leveraged with a loan, but that's good debt because historically it appreciates and it cash flows and it takes care of itself. So, you know, if anybody hasn't, you need to read the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book to get a better description of that than we can do in 30 seconds.
No doubt, Randy. No doubt. That's one of our favorite books. And then our last question is from Jim Rohn, another de facto mentor of ours. And he said that formal education will make you a living and self-education will make you a fortune. Wow. What do you say to that?
I've not heard that one, but that is profound as well. Well, everybody's different. So I'm going to defend the formal education. That's good. And I don't say people shouldn't do that. But I think what Jim is trying to communicate to the listener is you know, being active and taking that step, fighting those limiting beliefs and taking action, because action is what does it. If you, and back to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, if you want to get to that investor or that business owner quadrant, that's where we all want to get, where you have assets that are producing income for us to live off of, or we have assets that are producing incomes that I live off of. And I think Jim is just simply trying to say, you know, you need to educate yourself. All the things we talked about, start small. You don't have to buy Trump Towers to start out with. Start small and build on it incrementally over your lifetime. And it's the hare and the tortoise. The slow and steady wins the race over a long period of time. You're going to have ups and downs. We're facing challenges in the current market cycle. That doesn't mean you walk away from it. At least I'm not going to. You buy and you invest differently today than we did 5 years ago or even 24 months ago. But Jim would say, continue to work at it and continue to invest at it. And those events compound, make you a better investor and make you wealthy in the long run.
I love that. Randy, thank you for that answer because it's so powerful. You know, because look, you're a successful W-2 guy, right? You're a dad of four, you're a grandpa of five, right? And, you know, you actually remind me a lot of my dad, right? He's in finance. He's a dad of three and a grandpa of how many, Greg? Four, six.
Six.
And, you know, he's super, super, super risk averse and conservative, yet he has invested substantially with the Cityside Capital Passive Income Brothers. And because of that, he really retired several months ago with the clarity and the confidence to do so. His cash flow is such that he is set up, you know, and on top of everything else that he did in life. So it's just so powerful. And you have so much more control when you're making the decisions. You know, you're not going to get on the call with Tesla or the CEO or the C-suite of Tesla, Apple, Microsoft, you know, Netflix. It's just not going to happen. But you can hop on a call with Tim and Greg, with Randy, with other lead sponsors, you know, and get those answers and have more control and see the financials. And I think that's where the real power of real estate lies, that you can be in control. So Randy, with that being said, I want to thank you so much for your time. How can our listeners get a hold of you or find out more or hop on a call, email, whatever?
Greg, Tim, second, first of all, I mean, just really thanks again for the opportunity to be on your show. It's really been a pleasure. Love talking about this stuff as you do. But the easiest way to get a hold of me is really go to my website, invest-arc.com. You know, love to have you join our newsletter. Love to chat with you. You can schedule something there. Also, we can put my personal email if you want in the show notes, but just love to talk to people about anything real estate at their convenience.
Love this. So, Randy, thank you again for your time. I had a great time spending the time with our listeners this week, and we look forward to seeing you again, same time, same place next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. We would be grateful for your support of our podcast by giving our show a 5-star rating and review and subscribing to our show on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to take inspired action after listening to this show so that you can start building out your passive income streams. Finally, head on over to citysidecap.com to connect with us and find out more information about how to get started passively investing in real estate.